Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, our mini-sode series of podcasts spun off from the Geek Easy podcast, where in every episode we go back and review every single Marvel Cinematic Universe film. I am Pixel Dan.
Jonathan Leonard.
And Jaron McCaffrey.
What's going on, guys?
Man. You know,
we've been doing this podcast technically for years now, and I still haven't come up with a cool internet handle.
You don't need one.
You've got one.
I've got one, but I'm stuck with it. I have to say that, otherwise they don't know who it is. Like, yeah. So this is episode 2 of our Marvel series of podcasts, and in this episode we are going to be discussing The Incredible Hulk, which is also from 2008, correct?
Yep.
Same year as Iron Man.
About a month and a half later, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was real close,
right,
wasn't
after.
It?
Yeah.
Was real close.
Was it?
It was like the middle of June.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I do remember that. You got any setup for us, John? You want to start this off?
Yeah, sure, I can. This was the second movie in the run, so this would have been, like I said, June of 2008, coming hot off the heels of the ultra-successful Iron Man. There was a lot of, you know, attention paid to the fact that it was kind of an immediate follow-up, but as a whole, Hulk movies just didn't play as well as Iron Man did. And so the other bit of attention that was going into this one was the fact that this is 5 years after the Ang Lee Hulk.
Yeah.
Coming into this movie, it was very blurred on whether this was a remake or a reboot, or
yeah,
if it actually had anything to do with the Ang Lee. There wasn't a definitive vision of this is a totally separate thing, because it wasn't an origin story.
Mm-hmm.
They told the origin story through the opening promo, which is one of those things where, like, it didn't mesh with the Ang Lee Hulk at all, but it was vague enough to where,
like, it looked like it could have,
yeah,
right?
Like,
those opening scenes looked very, like they were almost, like, reshot fast recaps of the stuff we saw happen in the Ang Lee Hulk, I feel
vague
like.
Vague enough to where you could
yeah,
get that impression, but
okay,
different enough to where it kind of was on its own standalone. But it just kind of shows, going back in retrospect, you just kind of get more of the impression that they didn't, you know, they had plans, but they didn't have the definitive vision. There's no way they could have fully understood what they were building towards and what was coming. Do we want to talk about the surrounding stories of the movie, or do we just want to talk about the movie first itself and then get to some of the other stuff?
I was trying to put myself in the mindset, like, of this era when these movies were coming out, and you're kind of talking about that, where we didn't really have a clear understanding if this was like a sequel or if it was its own thing or a spinoff or what was going on. We weren't, like, fully aware how big this MCU thing was going to be yet, right?
Yeah.
Like Iron Man came out, and it was, like, when the movie was getting promoted, it was just an Iron Man movie.
Yeah,
and it was like, oh, cool, they're doing Iron Man now.
Like,
We've gotten all these other movies, and now they're on Iron Man.
It looked good, and the reviews were good. But, I mean, remember, like, going into a lot of these things, you know, I mean, the Fantastic Four looked pretty good when it came out. All of the comic book movies, none of them were marketed poorly, and most of them were financial successes.
Yeah,
not all of them were critical hits,
right?
But very few of them were actual, like, absolute critically panned either. You know, the good ones really rose to the top, and the medium to bad ones sort of stayed in the middle. But even the bad ones were making money. I mean, this would have been after X-Men 3. Several other of those kind of misfires that happened still, you know, even though you can watch the movie and clearly go, ooh, this is not well done. But they were still making money based on the fact that they were just these comic book properties. Hulk was one that didn't really. The Ang Lee Hulk. And it had...
I wonder why.
Yeah.
It was so good.
I was not impressed.
liked it? I don't know. That's a whole different argument.
A whole different podcast.
So... But not my favorite thing by any means. But anyways, whole different podcast.
Just bad,
sorry.
John. It's just bad.
Not just bad. It's
I know you
bad.
Love. I know you love Eric Bana. That movie was bad.
Not okay.
Okay. I win.
Moving on. The Hulk himself has not been a popular property since probably the early 90s, as far as film and television go. or whenever they stopped making those Bill Bixby like TV movies.
It was way before the 90s, wasn't it?
Well, the show ended, I think, in the 80s, but they were making, like, every couple of years, they were making, like, TV movies.
Oh, really?
And I think that bled into the early 90s, because they did one with Daredevil, they did one with Thor.
I remember the Thor and the Daredevil.
Oh, yes. I don't remember those. Only remember the Death Of.
Yeah, the Death Of, I think, was the last one they did.
Okay.
But I'm thinking that was early 90s.
Okay, I only remember that one.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, again, he's another one of those characters who, if you read comic books, if you read Marvel comics, you knew who the Hulk was. The Hulk was big as far as that world went.
Yeah, well, that show was big, you know. I mean, Hulk is one of the superheroes who kind of transcended comic books and became a little bit more mainstream, and people who don't read comics, don't follow comics, know who the Hulk is because of the movie with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that show elevated him above that.
Yep.
I mean, it's very similar to the whole Adam West Batman, right?
Yeah.
In the same kind of vein there.
Yeah. Which again, though,
I mean, that show is why
20 years earlier.
Yeah, right. That show is why Hulk Hogan is Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like
yeah. Absolutely. But again, we're well past that phenomenon. Hmm. And so the idea that like, well, this is going to carry over no matter what was kind of squashed with the Ang Lee Hulk.
Yep.
Which I can't honestly give you financials on right now. I feel like that was another one of those that even though people didn't like it that much, it still made a little bit of money, but I mean, wasn't breaking any records for sure.
Well,
And so then we're kind of leading into this, and this is a full 5 years after that. And so the expectations going into this one were a little unpredictable. As far as the advertisements, I mean, I think the trailers look good. I don't think anybody would argue any of that stuff. They did great with the casting.
Mm-hmm.
People were buzzing to see Edward Norton in one of these superhero films, and it seemed like a good fit for it.
Yeah, well, Edward Norton was hot. So this was a little different in that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. was kind of a, he's on the comeback, you know, but he did not have that reputation.
He felt like a Michael Keaton.
Yeah, you know, he was right.
Kind of like, I don't see him as a superhero, but I know who he is.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Edward Norton was kind of like, ooh, Edward Norton's going to be in it? I'll see it.
I mean,
for
multiple
sure.
time Oscar nominee. He's got a lot of real thespian credentials,
right.
You know, or however you want to say that. He's a very well respected actor.
Yeah.
And so putting him into one of these franchises, which they've done 100 times, that's kind of one of the things I've started taking note of as we've been rewatching these, is just the amount of Oscar winners that are in these movies.
Right.
I think like the three movie franchises, the Captain America, the Iron Man, and Thor, I think each of them respectively have like different like without overlapping, you can pick different Oscar winners out of each of those movies, usually the bad guy roles.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to see in retrospect all that, because some of them didn't win them until afterwards.
Right.
But Edward Norton is one of those guys who immediately gives you that impact right there. And William Hurt, who was an Oscar winner for this one. You've got Liv Tyler going in.
Yeah.
Who was, I don't know what happened to her, like where she's been. She was pretty big at the time.
Uh-huh.
So you had all sorts of star power going into the movie. You had Louis Lederer as the director. I hope I'm saying that right. This is the guy that brought us like the Transporter movies, and stuff like that.
Yeah, heck
so
yeah.
I mean, he had a big run right there for some of these, you know, actiony type movies. Like the everything was brewing very well for this coming in, and we didn't know what the Marvel brand meant yet.
Yeah,
but we had that as well,
right?
And that was coming right off of Iron Man. So we go into the Incredible Hulk here. Opens in the June of 2008 to good reviews.
Yep.
But not spectacular. I think it's sitting around a 67 on Rotten Tomatoes, 66, 67. It's one of the lower reviewed, but it's still positive.
Right.
You know, 2/3 of the critics liked it. I think the audience score, I want to say, is somewhere similar. It's one of those movies where I think it's funny looking back, because I remember walking out of the theater and like being with some people and running into some other people I knew, and everybody who I knew of as big comic book guys were all super buzzing about how great this was.
Yeah.
And then within a few years later, you could talk to those same guys and they'd go, it's fine. And that's one of those reasons, like I said, every time I walk out of one of these and somebody's like, oh, this is the best thing Marvel's done yet, no matter how good it was, I go, was it? We'll see.
We'll see how we look back on it.
But
one of the interesting things I was just reading here real quick is it says that Norton was hired to portray Banner and to rewrite Penn's screenplay in order to distance itself from the 2003 film and establish it as a reboot.
Gonna get into all of that, because there'll be a big section talking just about why Edward Norton isn't in the MCU.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
I've done some some research on this one.
Okay. Oh, well, I'm curious.
But let's go through the movie first. Okay, sure. I think that's the best way to do it. So, like I said, you know, box office wise, I think they can consider it. I don't think it's considered a bomb by any means, but I think it didn't quite make its production budget back in the U.S. And it's not a character that plays super well overseas, so. It's one of those, if you just look at the straight numbers, the budget's around $150 million, and I think its worldwide total is around the
$263 million.
Okay.
It's so, worldwide. Yeah.
So, but, I mean, that's not, those don't always, the budgets don't always consider all of the marketing costs and the setup costs, whatever. Now, granted, right. The box office also doesn't consider the lunchbox sales and the toys and whatever else. So, I'm sure it made some money.
Yep.
But, nothing like an Iron Man number.
Right.
Nothing that was really going to turn the heads. You know. Not a failure by any means, but the movie itself, I'm a big supporter of, and every time I watch it, I just kind of get reinvigorated for how good that is. And it's one of those movies where it really it feels like an outlier, especially where we've gone with the MCU and looking back on it as the only solo Hulk flick, the only Edward Norton Hulk flick. And it just had a different feel to it because when they made Iron Man and this basically at the same time, they weren't really, I mean, they had their moments where the one moment, I guess, in particular where it really, like, they do the Tony Stark cameo at the end. So you can understand that it's in the same universe, but they weren't made with the same style or by the same playbook or anything. Yeah. Marvel gets a lot of flack for being cookie cutter nowadays, but man, that system works.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much flawlessly. But this one doesn't really fit into that mold. Yeah. And for better or worse, it's not my favorite 21 movies in.
Right.
I liked it more than Iron Man.
Now?
I'm a Hulk guy.
You like it
at
now?
At the time.
Okay.
Walking out of that one, I was happier than I was walking out of Iron Man.
Okay.
I was less surprised
by
how much I liked this one.
Yeah.
Iron Man was not a shock, but, you know, like, I didn't care about Iron Man, and then all of a sudden I did care about Iron Man. I went into this movie loving Hulk, and then loved Hulk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, gotcha.
But I got exactly what I wanted out of a Hulk movie from this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of the best way to sum that up.
Yeah. How do you feel about him right now?
About this movie right now?
Having just watched Iron Man and just watched Hulk.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Like, does that... Do you still like this one better? Is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say yes to that.
Okay.
No, I don't. I think Iron Man's clearly the better movie.
Okay.
And Iron Man clearly had more of an impact on the build. The thing is, though, I almost have to look at this one outside of the rest of the MCU.
Okay.
As far as that goes, which doesn't make it better. It's just when I did my ratings going into the Avengers, I remember looking back over those five movies and going, man, like I don't know where to put Incredible Hulk because it felt like it was my favorite, but I think I put it right behind Captain America.
Yeah.
But definitely in front of Thor and Iron Man. And looking back now, it's just such a different animal that I can't put it there, but I also can't say it's my least favorite.
Right.
Like I can't do it.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't be an accurate statement if I did. I just have no idea where to put it.
I gotcha.
So at some point, you know, in a couple episodes here, we're gonna have to put those lists together because I designated in the first, and that's it's gonna be interesting when I'm forced to put pen to paper.
It is
to see where it lands. I think Edward Norton was perfect.
He was so good.
Yeah,
he was so good, and that's what really stood out to me is how much they leaned on his acting. You know, and how much he delivered in that. And I really felt like he looked, even looking back and where we've come and all the big stars that they've had in these Marvel movies, I really felt like you could see his acting a cut above.
Yes.
Yeah, and they were so willing to, you know, because now, and I love it, you know, but now the Marvel movies are built on quips and kind of back and forth and almost quick, flashy dialogue, and they were so willing to kind of let Ed Norton sit in a moment and be Banner in that moment, you know, and be brooding, you know. I mean, they go from his first Hulk out to when he gets back to America and he doesn't say anything, you know. They just let him work through those scenes and, you know, without dialogue, and he tells such a story in that moment, you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like a rushed segment where it's like, oh, look, he was here, and now he's here, and then he's here, and now he's back in the States so we can continue the story. Yeah. There's a definite, you feel that story evolve through. Yep. And I was not blown away because I know how good Ed Norton is. I was reminded once again, man, Ed Norton is so good. Mm-hmm. And I was impressed to see it, you know, and it does. So I see what you're saying, and I feel that outlierness of the Marvel movies because it was they were able to do that, and they just let him sit in those moments sometimes and be that great actor. Yeah.
Yep. So, as far as you know, I don't know if we need to do like a complete scene by scene.
No, we don't. I don't think so.
But I think the story was again, I love that they didn't have to go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I always love that.
Yeah.
I love that when we do
themselves down with a
don't need an origin story. Don't need an origin story.
I think it's funny that the thought process that goes in, because I really feel like we were talking about that dichotomy between not really understanding if it was a sequel or a reboot or what it was in relation to the first movie. Hollywood gets so caught up in the idea that if we're not telling you the origin, then it's got to be following something,
right?
When in reality, I mean, we know who the Hulk is,
you
know, so they could just do that title sequence, which I thought was really neat. And I thought there was a lot of weight just to the wordless interactions between William Hurt and Ed Norton,
mm-hmm.
and Liv Tyler,
yep,
like all of them just in those like gritty, like black and white, like flashbacks almost, those quick scenes and quick cuts, and the fact that you can see just facial expressions for a few seconds. That, you know, that moment when he's you know, about to walk out the door, and it looks like General Ross is sending guys after him, and he's looking at her, and he's got to run away, you know, and you just pull so much from that 10 seconds of footage.
Yeah.
And it's really just a powerful start. And then it lands us right where we need to be, and that's on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
We're in South America now. We're in
Brazil.
I think it is in my notes. It's because it's where all the rooftop chase scenes
are. Rio de Janeiro. Brazil.
Because that's it. Because man, have you ever seen a rooftop chase through Rio de Janeiro that has not been just absolutely entertaining? they might be out there, but I can't think of one. You know,
They're fantastic, and
then when they do the, it's one of the things that I kind of just jotted down as a side note. They do that scene at the beginning where they kind of show Banner fixing something in this old soda factory that he's working at. And the boss is even telling him, you know, you're super smart. I don't know why you're on the line. You can really help me out doing other stuff. Well, while he's fixing this thing, he cuts himself. And they show the blood drop as it falls through and it goes through a grate. And there's this real tense moment because Edward Norton sees his gamma-radiated blood falling towards this soda. And he runs down and makes him stop everything. And he goes through and he looks through the bottle. And everybody's looking at him like he's crazy. And he, you know, he finds the spot and he wipes it up and everything like that. And then he's like, okay, everything's fine now. He's going. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, shouldn't that be the reaction anytime you bleed into a food product?
Not in Brazil.
Is it? Probably not.
You know, but I thought that was funny. It's like, oh, he's got to run down there because, you know, all the gamma, and also because,
blood in my soul.
Yeah.
But they did. I really liked the throwbacks they did in this movie because they do a few of them too, and it's the fun comic book movie moments where they remember their history, you know. And so Lou Ferrigno shows up. Yeah. He actually he did the voice of the Hulk in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And that's he showed up on camera. Yeah. So it was neat that they threw those two nods to him. But the big one in the South America part is when he's practicing his Spanish. And he's learning to say, you know, the words. And so when he gets into the confrontation with a guy, he warns him, you know, don't make me hungry. You wouldn't like me when I'm hungry.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he also flips past that Bill Bixby movie.
Oh, yeah.
On the TV.
Yeah.
Also, every time he turned into Hulk, his eyes turned green first.
Yeah.
And they focused on that. That's totally straight out of the Bill Bixby stuff.
Yep.
And there was a hitchhiking scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was walking down the road.
And the music.
The music cues. It was pretty amazing how much they referenced it.
I really like, too, that when they do the first Hulk out scene and it's so dark.
So good.
They don't show you any actual like, transformation, like a little bit on like the night vision where you kind of see the leg moving, but nothing that gives you anything. And then all of a sudden the Hulk's there.
Yeah.
And he goes through that. And even in that scene, like you get to see the Hulk in that scene, but even then it's very shrouded.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get that full on view, but it's so much build where it gets you your hero, the thing you came to see at an early part of the movie, but it does it in such a way that when you get to the middle part, then they do the first big Hulk out at that college campus.
Yep.
And it is an event when it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, you got to see him earlier, but it was very shrouded, and now you get to see full out.
Well, it was perfect the way they did that, because you get early, so we're not sitting there waiting.
Yes.
You know, I think and I couldn't tell you specifically, but I remember in the Ang Lee Hulk, we wait so long for the Hulk.
Yeah.
That by the time, and then when it shows up, you're almost like, oh, it's about been waiting for this, and this is what you get. You know, so we get that Hulk, so we don't feel like we're waiting. And it was like, okay, we're at a Hulk movie. Okay, this is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
they don't give us Hulk all the way, so we're like, you know, it just builds the anticipation.
And we're 23 minutes into the movie when we first see the Hulk here.
Yeah.
Which honestly didn't feel like it was that long.
No.
Like I checked my timer two or three times before I wrote that down, because I'm like, has it been 20 full minutes already? Yeah. So it feels like they get to him quick, but again, without ruining,
right.
you know, the whole transformation thing. This is also where we get to see Tim Roth really, you know, ham it up a little bit. It was probably a bad way of saying that, because he's going over the top. But
right.
like, when he gets into this scene where he's basically fighting the Hulk in this warehouse while everybody else is running away, crapping themselves.
Right.
Also, how many army guys did the Hulk just murder?
Man.
Because it seemed like probably a lot.
Yeah. Well, there was probably it seemed like six in that scene, I feel like.
Yeah. And it's just one of those where it's like, I guess they technically didn't show them being squashed, but they had to be squashed.
Yes.
Yes.
Hulk smashed.
Yeah.
Hulk smashed.
Hulk smashed. Well, and Tim Roth said that.
Yeah.
You know, he did say, you know, I think he said he killed those guys. You know what I mean? Like,
used like some sort of euphemism, like cut through them like butter or something like that.
Yeah,
okay.
Like,
again, I felt like it was a little more definitive, but maybe. Definitive, you know, okay.
But it's right afterwards when Tim Roth is going to William Hurt, when he's when he's going to General Ross and just going, look, if Banner knows where this thing is, I want him.
Right.
I'm going to go right after him. And then General Ross has to be like, hey, that is Banner, you know, like that's the problem here.
Yeah.
But this is where Tim Roth didn't seem like army tough guy to me.
Right.
At all until this scene. And then going into this from then on, like I was sold on him through the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Because of that right there. Because they played on the age.
Yep.
But they played on the intensity, and he just had that look in his eye. Because I looked at Tim Roth and I was like, he seems a little old to be the army guy, and he seems a little like he's not like super in shape or anything like that, but then they just played that right into the characters.
Right.
Like, look, I'm past my prime, but in my prime, man, I would have wrecked somebody.
Right.
And then that desire just pushes through right there. So again, I think it's another instance where they had some pretty quality bad guys in this movie that really get overlooked.
You know,
once we get to the Abomination, is he great? No. I feel like I think he's better than you thought he was based on our conversation.
I'm gonna pull that back a little bit, because I enjoyed the end fight more than I remembered enjoying the end fight.
Okay. But up until then, I mean, like, through most of the movie, it's Emil Blonsky who is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And he was great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? So strong showing there. I really like the way they played up the relationship between him and Betty.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's funny looking back on this movie and wondering, like, I mean, Hulk was running around as an Avenger. Like, this is clearly a very strong emotional connection he has with this woman.
Right.
So I get that at the end he has to run away.
Yeah.
But from that character standpoint, I mean, later on he comes back and he's got timelines, you know, between the first two Avengers movies. Why in the world would he not have called her?
You know? Yeah, we never heard from Betty ever.
You ignore
again.
Stuff like that because you do,
right.
and because Black Widow makes the more interesting love connection for what they're doing now, and so it all makes sense. But it's another way where it kind of just plays a little sideways there.
Well, I really enjoyed Liv Tyler.
Yeah.
I thought you know, she's one that I remember, you know, she was in the Lord of the Rings, and she was fine, but she was like the lone woman in Lord of the Rings, you know, and that role didn't have much because J.R.R. Tolkien never wrote that role.
Yeah.
You know, she was in Armageddon. I liked Armageddon, but she was just, you know, she was just Steve Tyler's daughter in that. You know what I mean? like cool. She's the love interest. You're just, you know, so like to see her in this and to see her kind of, you know, holding her own in scenes with a performer like Ed Norton. I was super impressed. I was like, sure. You know, I was like, oh wow, she's.
And I guess Hitman William Hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of where I was like when I started to see like, oh man, she could have been a heavy hitter. Where is she?
That's you know, what that's, I was saying at the beginning. Yes. Like, where has she been?
Right.
She's great. Yeah. You know, or at least has the potential to be.
Yep.
And I just haven't seen her in forever.
Right.
Also, a side note, I always forget that Phil Dunphy's in the...
Yeah. Phil Dunphy.
And he's Doc Samson.
Doc Samson.
Yeah, like, he's a name...
Oh, well, I have no idea.
So they set up a couple characters.
He's another Gamma guy.
Yeah.
He's a
gamma-irradiated psychologist.
I was going to say, they set up a couple guys in this that never got to see follow through.
They set the leader up at the end.
They set the leader up.
They mentioned Rick Jones in that opening scene.
Yeah.
Like, he's... Like, they kind of, there's a section of that where they're just real quick flashes going through, like, known associates, and they mention Rick Jones in there, but he, I don't think he ever gets any screen time or anything, you know?
I don't know any of these guys.
Oh, Rick Jones is like the...
Well, you don't have to explain it to me. You know, I'll just say
stuff from the comics.
Yeah.
So they're making a lot of flashbacks. And again, it's got that very mid-aughts comic book movie feel where they do... I like the throwback stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes movies can overdo it. I didn't think this one did because they didn't let any of it get in the way.
Right.
But they also didn't totally change it to change it. They just sort of referenced things.
Yep.
But they laid it on pretty thick.
Yeah.
in a couple of ways. But as far as the basic story goes, it really the storyline is just Banner's on the run. The army's chasing him. It is really standard Hulk stuff.
Yeah.
He's trying to figure out how to cure himself. He's trying to figure out how to get back to his girl. All that stuff. Like, that's the outline and the surface of it. It is the performances in this that really kind of set it apart from that. And really, I wish it had made more money.
Yeah.
And I wish it had been... I don't care if it was better critically reviewed. I wish people said they liked it more. I don't care about the critics.
Right.
But I really feel like this hit on high cylinders for anything you would want out of a Hulk movie.
Yeah.
It just turns out that a lot of people weren't really into the idea of the standard Hulk movie as far as that goes, you know. I miss Edward Norton.
I do. I couldn't watch this movie. I found myself, as we've gone forward and know where the Hulk character is now, I found myself just imagining scenes that I've seen Mark Ruffalo do with Ed Norton in them, and it made me a little sad, a little bit like the same kind of thing I said about Terrence Howard in the first episode. Like, man, can you imagine, you know, I think about the scene in the Avengers where he's freaking out because the staff, Loki's staff, with Ed Norton and that intensity that Ed Norton, all due respect to Mark Ruffalo. I love Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, for sure.
But
yeah,
to think about Ed Norton doing that and the kind of intensity that Ed Norton brings to the table, man, that'd have been some kind of scene.
Yep.
Just thinking about Ed Norton interacting with Robert Downey Jr. Yep. Oh man, can you imagine? Man, yep. You know, the scene, I did that over and over and over again.
Or Ed Norton bouncing off the Rainbow Bridge.
Ed Norton bouncing off the Rainbow Bridge. Well, actually, I was picturing Ed Norton in Ragnarok when he's going, I don't know, maybe being trapped 2 years inside of a monster made me a little weird. Imagine Ed Norton doing that, you know?
You know, and again, I want to stress that, too. Nothing against Mark Ruffalo. I think he's great. I think for the way he fits into the MCU, you couldn't ask for much more.
Yeah.
He's got the quippiness to him.
Yep. Yeah.
The lack of intensity might be a strength. I don't know. I would rather see Edward Norton, because I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think all of those would have played that much better with that much better of a or that much more serious of an actor, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you rate acting. I think Edward Norton's one of the best that's ever lived.
Yes, I would agree with that.
So to say that Mark Ruffalo isn't quite that good, I don't mean as an insult in any way, shape,
or form. No, yeah. Well, and it's you could even say that Mark Ruffalo is a different style of actor. You know, you don't have to necessarily say he's less or anything like that, and that's not what I mean. He just doesn't. He's not. He's a different style. Yeah, he's more of like a character actor.
Exactly.
You know, and he's great.
Yeah, he clearly works perfect for what they're doing. I just, like you, I would really like to see what it could have been like had this stayed. And that kind of brings us to, well, we can talk about the end fight a little bit for a second. And then
I feel like we can't skip over the fact that as far as world building goes for the MCU, the whole reason Ross was chasing Banner down is because of his experiment, which he claims is to cure gamma radiation sickness in people, but is really because he's trying to recreate the super soldier program.
Yeah.
And so that's a great call out to Captain America before we see Captain America.
Yeah.
And
we get to see Emil Blonsky basically as a super soldier before he goes through the full transformation.
Yes.
And he just Captain America's himself up. And how much fun was that?
Yeah.
Like, how great of an addition to that? Because that scene where Hulk is fighting the army through that campus is just a fantastic Hulk scene.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know, I think you said probably the best one that's been put on film.
And it's my favorite Hulk scene.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It was good.
Better than anything they've done since.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I love all the movies that have come, I think this is the best Hulk scene.
Like that scene at the end of the first Avengers where he's going through stuff, that scene where he's fighting Iron Man, like those are all fun.
Yeah.
But they're over the top. Well, you can't say over the top destruction when you're talking about the Hulk, I guess. But like they are too big to be perfect in my view. They're fun. I enjoy them, but they're not.
It felt very grounded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The scene in this movie on the college campus feels so grounded.
Yep.
You know, and to see the Hulk. So there's two things that I wanted to mention. One, he fights Blonsky. Like Blonsky runs up and fights him hand to hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
How awesome that was in the middle of all that stuff. Like this dude just comes running up to him and holds his own for a while.
Does the fast run like Captain America? Like I pointed that out. I loved it. He ran past all the other soldiers real fast, and I was like, oh, that's awesome foreshadowing right there.
We've seen Cap do that a bunch of times since.
And straight runs in and does the hand to hand fighting.
Yeah.
But how great is the ending of that, dude? Where Hulk oh my god, dude, just wallops him into that tree.
What is he calls for it?
Smashes him.
He just walks up straight up. It's like, give me what you got.
So it was so amazing. I was just like, oh god, like even watching it back this time.
It's gross.
Yeah. Wrecks him, dude. Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
So one of the things that stood out to me about that is how it feels like such a reversal, because we're used to seeing like an underpowered hero who powers up and goes in. You know, the first time he goes in and meets the big monster, and well, he almost holds his own, but not quite.
Yeah.
You know, and so then he has to go and train harder or whatever to, you know, for the in fight. I thought it was real interesting that they kind of reversed that, you know, because obviously we're all going for the Hulk, but you know, they and William Hurt's Thunderbolt Ross, his reaction, he's doing it. He's actually doing it. You know what I mean? Like like I was like, I was totally into that. I was like, this is very cool.
Oh man, it was so good.
Yep.
So let's jump ahead into the Abomination fight.
Okay.
So we see Blonsky. Like, basically, he gets addicted to the power, right?
Yeah.
And he wants to be... because Hulk whoops his butt.
Yeah.
So he wants to be...
From the second he saw Hulk, he wanted that.
Right. So he wants to be the Hulk. He wants what the Hulk has. And so he ends up, like... What's that scientist's name? Stearns? Samuel Stearns.
Yeah.
So he's the guy that they tease as being the leader, too. Because we see the whole gamma drip on his head, and his head starts mutating, and then we never see that ever again. We never get it ever again, so that's the end of that. But I guess he could always come back. You never know. You never know. But that's basically how he, like, gammas out and turns into the Abomination, which I thought was a fun explanation. Like, they worked the super soldier, and I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know if that's part of his story in the comics. The whole super soldier serum thing.
I don't think it's that closely attached to the super soldier serum.
Yeah,
I don't know either.
It was cool though. Yeah. It worked great in this.
Yeah,
I thought that was
perfect.
Like that's some world building that actually does play out and work real well for what they were doing here. You know, all the other things that they didn't quite, you know, move further on. This is definitely one of those things that is part of the MCU and that fits right in, I think. And I thought that was really cool. These two look like big old CG monsters, though. Like the CG wasn't quite there yet, but it was getting better. So you watch back this scene, and it looks like two video game characters fighting each other.
Like the Hulk scenes, like where they just show him, even through the army fight for the most part, when he's really the only CGI going through. Like I thought that Hulk looked terrific. Yeah. I like the look of that Hulk probably a little bit more than I like the updated like Avengers one.
Yeah,
I liked the dark tone to it. The muscles looked a little more.
He was darker,
less cartoony.
He's not as bright as he is now.
Yeah. He wasn't as bulbous. He was like a little leaner. He was like tighter and shredded, ridiculously.
Exactly. You know, like, and I really dug. Not that I have anything against the way he looks now.
Yeah.
You know, but I really liked the look of that Hulk there.
No purple.
But
pants.
Yeah, but then when it becomes just CG destruction fight, you lose a little of the details, and it just becomes two cartoon monsters running into each other. It's still entertaining, I thought. I think it still looked good. It just didn't look as good. I still like the way they put that fight. The more I watch that fight, though, the more I really think, like, I'm trying to put the timelines together because I feel like that Ultimate Destruction video game on the PlayStation must have come out right as they were, like, ramping up pre-production on this movie.
Yeah.
Because so much of what happened in that fight was pulled right out of
that game. Dude, he ripped the car in half and did the... Okay, so like...
Well, the thunderclap... And again, that's a Hulk move anyway.
So
like,
my 5-year-old's a big Hulk fan, so... He plays that game on the PlayStation
too.
Yeah, because because you don't have to do anything except run around and smash things, and that's super fun to him. So when I showed him this movie, he was watching it with me for this. He had never seen this one, so I was real excited for him to watch it. As soon as Hulk grabbed that car and ripped it in half and started punching Abomination with it, he went, "It's like the video game!" Like he got so happy, it was hilarious. I wanted to point out that right before the fight where Banner falls out of the helicopter, like basically convinces them like to let him go, so they go stop it, and they let him.
I love what he said. What he said there. I don't mean to interrupt you, but what he, you know, she, because I think it was Betty who was like, you know, you can't control this thing, even if it comes back. He's like, maybe not control it, but maybe just aim it.
That's cool.
So great.
Yep.
I love this though because he falls out, you know, thinking that he's gonna be Hulk by the time he hits the ground. So as he's falling out, my thought process is, that's actually really awesome because the whole thing in Thor Ragnarok is totally a callback to this moment.
Yeah.
Except he bounced off the rainbow bridge instead of turning into Hulk.
Yeah.
But then when I watch this, he does the same thing.
Yeah.
He smashes into the ground and doesn't turn into Hulk. But instead of bouncing off of it like in a hilarious fashion, he just makes a crater.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, so I was like,
they weren't positive he was still the Hulk.
So I was kind of like, okay, so maybe they just made the same joke twice, but did it funnier the second time rather than this time.
Because he flops. Because
he just flops, and he's like his arms back behind his body, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then he comes crawling out of the crater as Hulk, so, you know, it's all serious and awesome, and then they have their big CG fight, but it is a fun CG fight. And actually, this is another scene, too, that... Spencer's excitement got me excited. Because first of all, let me tell you, this is really funny because you always hear comic book fans like kind of getting irritated about silly things like, how come he's not wearing purple? He should be wearing purple pants.
Yeah.
So they never did the purple pants in this movie, but they made a joke about it once.
Yep.
Well, my 5-year-old was distraught that he wasn't wearing purple. Why isn't he wearing purple pants, Dad? He's supposed to be wearing purple pants. Like my 5-year-old was upset that he wasn't wearing purple pants. But
I want all of you 50-year-olds who get upset about that kind of thing to think about.
Yeah, I know.
The five-year-old. And how acceptable it is for the 5-year-old to get upset.
Hey, but also, it didn't stop his enjoyment because he seriously loved every
Hulk.
Another
lesson to learn.
He loved every Hulk movie in this. But let me tell you, when he comes crawling out of that crater, I guess I need to bring up, this is important too. He watched that movie without me because he couldn't wait for me.
Oh.
And so then when I watched it again, he was telling me everything that was about to happen before it happened, because that's how excited he was. So when Hulk comes crawling out of that crater, he's got his shirt half torn off. Spencer's going, "Daddy, watch this. Daddy, watch this. Watch. He's going to rip his shirt off. He's going to rip his shirt off." And Hulk comes out and he like, "Oh, looks all badass," and pulls that shirt off. And Spencer goes, "See, see, he ripped the shirt off." He was so into it. And I was just like, like I was way into it with him. So that was a real cool moment. Yep. I don't know, watching it with him kind of made me a little more excited about the whole thing.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, yeah. So that was fun. I think the Abomination fight's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
honestly, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah,
I liked it more. I've remembered it for a long time as too cartoony and sort of like, you know, we have this great movie with all this great acting, and then we finish it with a cartoon fight.
Yeah, okay. You know what I mean? I get it.
It was,
but that was the comic book part.
True.
That was the part we wanted.
And
right?
Yeah,
He finally said Hulk smash. Do you remember how big of a deal it was that Hulk didn't talk in the Ang Lee movie? People were irate about that. All we wanted was a Hulk smash. We wanted one Hulk smash, and they finally gave us that in this movie.
Okay.
He said Hulk smash at the end there. Remember? That was the first time he talked, too.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it more than I remember.
Yeah.
It was certainly less bad than I remember. Like, I remember it being, like, straight up, like, ugh, that... This movie's great, and then the Abomination fight happened. It was not, you know, it was not like that. It was acceptable.
Yeah.
And it gave us some Hulk at the end. But it gave me the one moment where I got so angry because, you know, Liv Tyler comes out and the Hulk is about to kill the Abomination.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Stop, you know, don't, and you can't, you, what are you going to do with the Abomination?"
Yeah.
Put him in jail?
Yeah.
No, the Abomination dies. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Liv. You don't stop the Hulk from killing the Abomination. Okay.
I remember Spencer asking me why she stopped him.
Yeah.
He was like, "Why? Why would she do that?"
Yeah. And like,
I had to try to do the whole, "Well, because he's a good guy and good guys don't kill bad guys."
Right. Like, that's the, I mean, that's fine for the 5-year-old.
That's what I had.
Yeah. Look. Okay, Emil Blonsky turned into a skeleton
abomination.
Yeah, a skeleton monster with bone spikes sticking out of him.
Monster.
Right, a Hulk size. You don't come back from that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and then you smash. You know, then you smash all of Harlem and just no. You don't. We don't arrest this guy. Okay, this guy gets euthanized.
Yeah, rehabilitation.
Yeah. I just pictured the Abomination in that Wreck-It Ralph scene. "I'm the Abomination. I'm a bad guy." Abomination, just because you are a bad guy does not mean you are a bad guy.
Or hanging out with Daniel Bryan in therapy.
Yes. Jeez. So I had a problem with that. And I feel like that was out of, like you know, the most bleeding heart, you know, social justice, whatever.
Gotcha.
Character, it cannot look at the Abomination and go, "No, we got to save the Abomination." What, you know what I mean? I just feel like that's, you know, like that's beyond. Sorry, we can't save the Abomination. He's
gone.
He's done.
He's already far too far gone. Cool. All right. So, where does that bring us then? I guess we need to talk about the end credits.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of brought it up a little
well,
bit.
Well, and, but, you know, just the way that they kind of trail off there, like, you know, like he's on the run again, and I really dug, they had done those Days Without Incident counters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which
I really
dug.
Yeah, that was cool.
Kind of popped up, and so they finally do, they set him up as far as, you know, being on the run again and everything, but they've got that, the very end scene of the movie, technically, is where he's sitting there doing his meditation, and they've got that counter going again, and it's up to like 30 or 90 days or
30,
whatever. And, and he's sitting there doing his thing, and then all of a sudden he kind of just opens his eyes, and you see the green, but instead of looking like he's in anguish, he smiles.
Yeah.
You know, and then the counter flips back to zero, and then
that's the end.
End of movie.
The tease,
kinda,
that he's learning to control.
Right.
The Hulk.
Exactly. Yeah. So, which they never, I mean, they never really revisit it all.
I mean, they kind of, I guess,
restart it.
Yeah. Well.
I think it fits perfectly with where he's at in Avengers.
He still seems to be in anguish in the Avengers. You know, like, I mean, well, I'm not saying anguish. from this scene we should have garnered the idea that, oh, now he's in total control of it by any means, but like. He wasn't happy about any of this when we find him in the Avengers, you know.
Well, except that he so I feel like in the Avengers, and this may be getting into Avengers territory, right?
Well, yeah, I mean they bleed, you got to a little.
Okay. So you know, he teases it several times, clearly having it under wraps. You know, he threatens Black Widow with it, you know, and he's starting to get angry and he slams a thing and she pulls the gun, and he's like, hey, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to see where we both were at. That's when we see that, you know, she had her back up,
yeah.
You know, and they've got the building surrounded.
Yeah.
When Tony Stark is trying to jab him, and, you know, he says, I wouldn't have come on board if I couldn't handle pointy things.
It's just the general attitude more than the control factor, I guess, because, again, it's a one-second scene, but he seems to have, like, a level of pride in that control.
Right.
Whereas when we meet him again in the Avengers, he's very downtrodden about it. Even if he's got some control, he's still...
I still don't get that.
The trick is that he's always angry.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know, because they get to the end. And so I take that to mean, you know, because he says, that's my trick. I'm always angry. So he's always just angry right at that level.
Yeah.
Right to where he's has to be conscious of holding it back all the time.
Yeah.
Right? So I think it's kind of a perfect...
Okay.
Segue there. You're a kind of perfect lead-in at the end of this movie where, you know, he opens his eyes. So he's obviously on the verge, but he smiles because he can feel like, oh, I'm right here. I can hold it back. You know what I mean? Like that's how I read it. Cool.
I guess I can see
Plus,
that.
I'm glad that we didn't just get him able to control it right away.
I mean,
I still like the idea that Hulk is like, it's a separate person, right? It's an alter ego that he wants to be in control, but Banner wants to be in control, and that's the inner struggle.
And some of the Smart Hulk stories are neat. You know, I'm not saying I dislike those. I like the uncontrollable beast aspect of the character. That's what makes it interesting.
Plus, like we've kind of talked about on our main show before, I think we're building to the Smart Hulk.
Yeah.
And that way we've had all this time to like get to this point, and I think that's coming.
Yeah.
So we'll have that story now.
So then the post-credit scene, which takes place before the credits.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's clearly like an epilogue, you know. And that's the second one we've got now. The first one was Nick Fury showing up, and I wish I'd looked this up, but I'm just having this thought right now. I feel like this was maybe added as a last minute addition.
Mm.
I'm not positive about this. Maybe this was in the can before Iron Man even came out.
You know, I feel like I heard that back then.
Yeah,
that's kind of
tumbling around in my mind right now. Like they looked at that when everybody was really excited about that. We got to throw one on here
right.
too.
Yeah, you know?
And so it's a real simple one. It's General Ross is sitting in a bar, drowning his sorrows at losing the Hulk again.
Yep.
Yeah.
And door opens, bright shining light, in walks Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And they just have a short little conversation about, I can't remember how he words it.
He says something like he's got the answer to his Hulk problem or something.
Well, he says I'm putting together a team.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the very end, but he says something about... Because he says something to him about, you know, you've got some sort of problem.
One to talk. Yeah, that's exactly what Ross says. But you're one to talk, Stark. And then he says something about putting together a team. Okay. Yeah, we're putting together a team. And then that's kind of just the end of it.
And then boom, credits. Yeah. You know?
So that's fun, though. Fun. Mm-hmm. Keeping the world building going. I remember back then the excitement was just like, oh, my God, are they really doing this?
Yeah.
Like, was like, oh, man.
Because you were chomping at the bit for something like that afterwards.
Yeah.
So. Now, and then the coming years, the time between this and the Avengers suiting up is when we lose Edward Norton, and that's kind of where, you know, I've read several versions of what happened there, and they all seem to be definitive, but they don't all match up, so I don't know the exact truth to it. When they hired him, they went after him for this movie, and he originally said no, and I think you had mentioned Zach Penn had written the script. Well, Zach Penn was the guy. He had done X-Men 2, which was very good. He had also written X-Men 3, which was very bad. So you get kind of that, you know, and he comes in, but he's got that super, and again, you know, the Hollywood mindset of, well, this guy's written some superhero movies, let's bring him in.
he put together a script for this that nobody was really happy with.
Yeah.
So when they initially went to Edward Norton, they said, we want you to play this role. He said, no, I'll pass. And they came back to him at one point, and they said, we'd really like you to write this movie and play the role. And then all of a sudden, that started interesting him. Yeah. You know? So he really came on as both writer and star of this. And he had a pretty short turnaround time to redo that script. And from my understanding, basically rewrote almost everything.
Okay.
Like, there were certain guidelines he had to stick with because they had already done location scouting based on the script that they had.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure 99% of that thing went out the window and was rewritten by Edward Norton. Jeez. Now, one of the points of contention I've seen is that he gets no writing credit for this movie whatsoever,
right,
which is not Marvel's fault. That one goes to the Writers Guild of America or Hollywood or whatever it's called, because the guilds in Hollywood are super weird and very archaic in some of these rules. But basically, the only thing that counts for the amount of a script that is yours, according to the guild, like if you come in, they basically have rules that say if you worked on the first draft of a script, you are required to get some sort of credit for that movie. Moreover, if you completely rewrite a script but cannot take credit for over half of the dialogue, then you don't have to get any credit for this movie. So I don't know if it was all kept from the old or if there was collaboration on the dialogue, but somewhere, someone along the line looked at it and went, okay, even if Edward Norton wrote almost all of these scenes, he didn't write enough of the dialogue, he doesn't get any credit for this.
Crazy.
Whatsoever. So this is a movie basically that he has put together from scratch in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the restrictions on where the scenes are going to take place, and he gets no credit for that whatsoever. So I think that was point of contention one. But again, not Marvel's fault there. And then you get the stories of Edward Norton just being notoriously difficult to work with, which...
Spike Lee said he wouldn't work with him again after the 25th hour. You know how crazy you have to be for Spike Lee to go, whoa, this guy is a bit much.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, there's stories from that movie, stories from American History X, where he basically just like locked himself in an editing room and made the movie he wanted it to be, which... He does pretty well when he puts movies together, you know? And I heard stories, mixed amounts of stories about this one. He was supposed to have a level of creative control, and I think that's where the Marvel contention came from. I don't think he was so much upset that they didn't credit him as a writer, because that's sort of out of their hands. But when they said, hey, we need you to fix this movie, he fixed it to the way he liked, and then they still made a toned-down version of that.
Yeah.
Because this movie clocks in somewhere around like an hour 55, something like that.
Yeah.
His version of it, like this version was way more character-driven than the original script, which I think has to show through because this shows through is really character-driven.
Yeah.
His version had 20 to 25 more minutes of backstory build, flashbacks, not origin stuff necessarily, but really getting you into the mindset of Banner. Now, without some extra action, I don't know if 20 extra minutes in that movie would have been necessary or not. I would love to see it and compare them.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying he's right that it had to be that way. But I can understand when you come to him and say, hey, we want you to act in this, and you've told us no, but we also want you to write it, and we're going to make your movie. And then you go and do all this work and then make this movie, and then you look at it and you go, that's not my movie.
Right.
And they go,
yeah,
it's our movie.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Like, I can see that being...
It's also tough to take with a grain of salt when you think about all this extra character work that was done.
Yeah.
Which is all of Ed Norton, you know, acting. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and he's going, no, this is all great. Why are you taking all my scenes? Yeah. You know what I mean? Hold on, man. You know?
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, and that's when things get kind of sticky because there's that period leading up to the Avengers. Like, all these movies are coming out. They're all making money. They're gearing towards this thing. And then they've got Edward Norton. And I remember the timeline on this because I was paying close attention to how this was going to go because I really liked Edward Norton, and he seemed to be the one guy that they weren't necessarily sold on. And they kind of played this cat and mouse game where they were trying to... Marvel was doing the thing where they were like, oh, yeah, we'd love to work with him. Let's see how this whole thing works out. And I think they kept kind of
lowballing him and whatever else. They kept setting it up to where he would walk away and they could just walk away scot-free. And then finally, like, he came straight out and was just like, you know what? I think this is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to working with some of my friends. Let's just go ahead and do this thing. And Marvel was like, hey, we got a different guy.
Right. Or,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Man.
There was some, I didn't remember this part at all, but there was some kind of shady quotes from Kevin Feige. Feige? Is that how you say it?
I think it's Feige. Feige? I don't know. We've always said Feige, yeah. So.
And it's one of those where I need to figure out how to say that word because I say it a lot. he came out and flat out just said something about, you know, we need somebody who's more willing to work with the ensemble cast and this and that, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, he said a quote that wasn't flat out going, nah, Ed Norton sucks. But when you read it, you know, you're going, man, this is basically straight up throwing him under a bus.
Yeah.
And then Edward Norton's agent came back and was like, hey, that's nonsense. Like, we were super into this idea. There's no reason we know of that this would happen except for a money thing, yeah. And I have no idea why they're going to talk so much, you know, crazy stuff about us. But I've never seen Edward Norton take a hard line against being, like, super upset about it. You know, he's always basically said, look, I mean, I wanted to do a lot of smaller projects anyway. I wouldn't have been able to do it if I had done that. It did sound fun. I would have liked to have done it. I'm glad I got to do it the one time, but I really like what Mark Ruffalo does. So when you hear the stories of how terrible he is to work with and how off-putting he can be, and then you see all those quotes like that, you know, yeah. You just go, it's just one of those things. I don't think it worked out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody needs to talk about anybody else. And for the most part, they haven't been. I would have loved to have seen it because Edward Norton's one of my favorite actors of all time. And this is one of, you know, not necessarily, probably not even my top five favorite characters, but hovering right around that list. You know?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I thought the matchup was absolutely beautiful, and I would have loved to have seen it come through in some of these other movies. Just didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
So you take what you got. What we got's pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah, you know? Agreed. Agreed.
And we run with it. Yep. So.
Totally. Awesome. Well, that was The Incredible Hulk from 2008. Awesome stuff. Great discussion. And this is really, really fun. I'm having a lot of fun going back and watching all these old MCU movies.
Definitely. So
I hope you guys are enjoying it as well. And I hope you're maybe doing the same thing, watching these old movies and then listening to our discussions. And of course, we always love to hear from you guys what you think about what we're saying, what your thoughts are on the film. And you can do that over on our Facebook page. Just search for the Geek Easy Podcast and feel free to post your thoughts there. We'd love to interact with you. You guys,
I want to know what your favorite Hulk scene that could have been.
Ooh,
what's your favorite Hulk scene that would have been so much different in the Avengers or Age of Ultron or Ragnarok, whatever, with Ed Norton instead of Mark Ruffalo?
That's awesome. Yeah. We gave you guys homework. I like that. We gave you guys homework. Don't forget, we'll be doing every single MCU movie here on this new spinoff podcast of The Geek Easy leading up to the release of Avengers Endgame. I will definitely be posting the schedule of all of these podcasts on that Facebook page as well. It should already be up there, hopefully, by the time you guys are listening to this. But this will be part of our regular Geek Easy podcast feed on the off weeks of the actual full episodes of The Geek Easy. So you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play, and also on YouTube if you guys prefer the video version. Even if you don't, go over there and hit that subscribe button for us. That'll help us out a ton. Get more eyes on us. Push us out into the algorithm that you've heard so much about. We need to be in that algorithm, especially with all the Marvel stuff coming up.
Math doesn't know we exist yet. Help us.
Hey, Pixel Dan.
Yo.
Before we go completely, you challenged me in the last one that I have to come up with a clever rating.
I forgot. Oh, yeah. Score. Yeah. Okay, ratings.
I did not. I did not, because The Incredible Hulk smashes 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Smashes 3.5 out of 4 stars. Ooh, I like that. And that's a high rating.
Yeah.
3.5 out of 4. Very cool. It's a lot of fun. And I think, like I said, watching it with my 5-year-old who loves Hulk made it really enjoyable for me to watch. So good stuff. I'm looking forward to Iron Man 2, yep. Which will be on the next episode. So episode?
Episode.
Episode.
We're fancy around here. We're saying how we want to say it.
All right, guys. Until next time.
Marvel good yay.
Marvel good yay.
Marvel good yay.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of The Geek Easy Podcast.